Ready to prioritize yourself? Your skin is a great place to start. Dime Beauty, founded by a master esthetician, is more than just a skincare company. With four skin-conscious categories, skincare, beauty, body care, and fragrance, Dime offers simple, spa-worthy products that will help bring your glow back. Whether you're revitalizing your regimen with nourishing products or building one from scratch, Dime makes it easy. The Work System, our all-in-one best-selling routine, includes a cleanser of your choice, toner, serums, and moisturizers, taking the guesswork out of skincare for your healthiest, happiest skin yet. Dime's commitment to clean ingredients and sustainable packaging ensures every product is as gentle on your skin as it is on the planet. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews and a loyal community, the results speak for themselves. Revive your skin and give yourself the routine refresh you deserve by visiting dimebeautyco.com. That's dimebeautyco.com. Your best skin awaits.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone!
Swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
What's up? Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 210. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Remember, before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on the WEEI YouTube channel where you can subscribe to that page and find all of our episodes on the Play Tessie playlist. Hit the thumbs up on all those videos when you see them. It helps us out a ton. And you can find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Sammy's here. Pat's here. And it's Gordo here. And hey, we had a rough 10-day stretch there. Pat and I went on radio yesterday. Yesterday, as we're recording, so on Saturday with Joe Weil, and we did 3 hours of radio, and it was coming off of the 10-day stretch where, I mean, I read it off on the radio where it was basically every single day for 10 days was either the Red Sox losing a game, the Celtics blowing a 20-point lead, or if the Red Sox won, something bad happened. So with the Red Sox wins, you had Costas going down for the year, you had Raffy going nuts to the media, and the third Red Sox win in that stretch, you had the Celtics blowing a 20-point lead. So there was no day in that 10-day stretch where you could just be happy as a Boston sports fan. We went on radio. We hashed everything out. We talked a ton of Raffy Devers. Pat, you did a great job. Joe Weil did an awesome job. A lot of great callers, too, even though it was during the Celtics game, too, and tons of people calling in wanting to talk Raffy, had Brian Abraham on, had Bradfoe call in from a wedding. So it was a great run, but we needed that to be the borderline between the bad and the good. And again, like, we've had tons of Sox stretches where it feels like they're about to turn a corner, and then right when you feel like they're about to, they revert right back to their old ways. So we'll see what happens, but that series could have been bad. You lose the first game, which is the one game in the series you weren't facing a top four Cy Young finisher from last year. And you got a great start from Hunter Dobbins, and they just couldn't score. And you could have looked at that series, and it could have been a sweep. It could have been. But you face Cole Ragans the next day. You put up a 10 spot on the Royals that day, and you face Seth Lugo today, but you get an awesome start from Lucas Giolito, and all of a sudden, you know, the Royals had won 16 of 18 coming into this series, or coming into this game, that second game with the Red Sox. And, you know, they flipped the script and they won those two games. And we're feeling a hell of a lot better right now than we could have. I know that there's a lot to get into. We're gonna talk about more Devers stuff because that story continues to develop. We're going to talk about the Seydon Rafaela stuff that started up on Sunday. Obviously, he's played better, but there were some comments in a Sean McAdam article we're going to get into. But I mean, first, we're always a big vibe check podcast, fellas. I mean, I'm feeling a lot. It's more of like I can exhale. I can breathe a little bit after I felt so backed into a corner, because it felt like the world was ending and then actually things would just get worse. But now things seem to have turned the corner. It feels better.
Yeah, this to me feels, it feels a lot like early 2000s with Manny, where Manny would say or do something either bad or off the cuff. People would get mad at him, call for his head, got to trade him, get him out of here. And then he'd hit a home run, the Red Sox would win, and all is well again. That's exactly how it feels with Rafael Devers right now. He pissed a lot of people off. We had, you know, John Henry ownership fly out. We'll get to that later on in the show. And then the Red Sox win 2 out of 3 against the Royals, and we're all happy. Rafi hits the furthest home run for the Red Sox this season, 440 feet dead center. Woo! So yeah, it kind of, to me, it feels like a throwback Red Sox weekend. I so many times remember hearing family members, friends being like, I can't stand this Manny Ramirez guy. A few hours later, this Manny Ramirez guy is so good. We love him. So it's just how it goes, man. It's the circle of life here in Boston. We get, you know, get mad at the star player for doing something goofy. And, you know, as long as you're winning and performing, it's a cliche, but it's true. Winning really, really does cure all. So I'm feeling good. Feeling good for cautiously optimistic, I'll put it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not taking a full exhale, Gordo. I'm doing like a half exhale.
You shouldn't.
They beat a really, yeah, they beat a really good team. They beat a really hot team. They hit some good pitching. So like everything that could have gone well this weekend, aside from not scoring that first game, everything that could go well did go well, which was good. The reason I'm not exhaling is they have Detroit up next. Depending on how that goes, if they win 2 out of 3, it's a full exhale. So they figured something out. They're 2 over. Ideally, they leave Detroit at least over 500. That's the goal. But I feel better than I did on Thursday, so I'll take it.
So I want to go back to Sammy's Manny comment, because that's a really interesting comp, and you've got me thinking. Because
it's not perfect, by the way. I just want to say it's not a perfect comparison, it's similar. Yeah,
it's similar, and it's definitely the most similar to Manny that we've had. The difference here is that Manny would act completely irrationally, and none of what Manny was my idol growing up. Manny forever will be my favorite player. He was my superhero as a kid. He could do no wrong in my eyes. I had family and friends tell me, like, this guy is bad. You have to understand he's bad for this team, and I didn't give one shit. But that said, his actions made no sense. They came from a place of nonsense. Whereas Rafi, it's like I can at least understand why he's upset. But you're right. It's the same concept of, like, the entire fan base wants to kill this guy, and then all of a sudden, game 2, 4 for 4 plus a walk. Game 3, what was it? Two hits with one of them being the bomb of all bombs. Like, yeah, That was awesome. But I want to talk a little bit about the starting pitching that the Red Sox got in the series, because starting pitching is something that with this team, it's gone up and down. And obviously we've talked, and Pat, we talked about it on the radio, the seeming absence of a number 2 starter. We had a texter text in that he thought that the Red Sox were missing a number 3 starter as well. I pushed back on that, but I'm not willing to push back on the number 2 starter. I do think that we have yet to see if this team will have a number 2 starter, if they need to trade for one, if someone on this team is going to emerge in that role. But I thought it was going to be Tanner Houck, and clearly it's not. But let's stick to this series. Hunter Dobbins, 6 scoreless. Garrett Crochet, 7 innings, 1 run. Lucas Giolito, 6 2/3 innings, no earned runs, 1 unearned run. So you had 19 2/3 innings from the starters in this series, in which they only gave up 1 earned run against a team that had won 16 of 18. So I know the Royals aren't the greatest offensive team in the world, and there's definitely holes in that lineup, but go beyond the holes in that lineup. They took care of Bobby Witt. Lucas Giolito struck him out all 3 times today.
Giolito had Bobby Witt looking like a double-A player out there. Wow.
It was impressive. Oh. And what, he gave up 2 hits? So this is now a guy who's been really impressive in 2 of his 3 starts here. Obviously not someone that you should be ready to anoint as like a top 3 in the rotation guy, but obviously this is a guy with all-star Cy Young vote upside because he's done it before. Not saying that you should count him in for that. But I'm just saying that people kind of, I mean, certainly before he debuted this year, but again, after his second start where he really wasn't good, people wrote him off as like, this guy's either going to be a number five in your rotation or he's going to be ousted from the rotation for any number of pitchers getting healthy in just a matter of weeks. I don't think it's going to be that simple. I mean, he was throwing all four pitches today and he looked good.
Yeah, he did look good. I think anyone who's judging a guy who just came off of major surgery after his second start, I would say pump the brakes a little bit. And to put some context into what you just said, Gordo, Lucas Giolito in his, you know, call it quote unquote prime, when he was at his best, he's still going. He's not old by any means, just this is his age 30 season. But his mid-20s, when he was at his best, he was a guy who would give the Chicago White Sox about 175 innings a year, 200 strikeouts, and a mid-threes ERA, like a 3-4 most of the time. Something like that. A guy who's gotten Cy Young votes three times. So this is one of the most important storylines this whole season for the Red Sox. I'm comfortable saying that. It's a huge storyline because, like you said, they don't really have a number two starter. You have guys vying for that role. Hauk last year looked like he could be that guy, hasn't really looked like that now. Bounced back a bit, but it still remains to be seen. Bayo, haven't seen enough from him yet this year. And Giolito's the guy who's done it before. So, Walker Buehler as well. Got to throw him in. He's hurt, so
yep.
Apologies. But Giolito, if he is not the same guy he was a few years back, I won't go that far, but if he's close to that, that's a big weapon. And we forget, when he came to the Red Sox, his numbers looked really, really bad. But that needs a lot of context. He was traded from the White Sox to the Guardians to the Angels in the same season. He pitched for, White Sox,
flip.
Angels, Guardians. Yeah. Regardless, he played for three teams in 1 year. That's very rare.
Three teams
very
in one rare. Month, you could shorten it down to.
Yeah, it was very fast. It was very hectic. On top of that, he was going through some personal relationship stuff, which he's spoken about. That can't be easy. We've all gone through that before, but we all haven't done that while pitching in Major League Baseball for three friggin' teams.
So the highest pressure year of your life.
Yeah. So, like I said, needs a lot of context. And then he gets hurt. He signed with the Red Sox. The whole reason the Red Sox said they want to sign him, we need an innings eater. Here's your guy. Doesn't pitch a single inning for you. So I'm willing to be patient with Lucas Giolito. Way too many people making these grand declarations. He's only throwing two pitches, blah, 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 blah. Well, today he threw four pitches, I believe, four consistent pitches, maybe even more, but he was mainly throwing four different pitches. Looked really good. The velocity was up. His command was outstanding. Just everything you want to see. A very encouraging start for Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, I think last time we talked about Giolito, we were saying that for someone like him to operate as a two-pitch pitcher, he has to be able to command the changeup. And even then, hitters have a 50-50 shot of guessing right. If they're sitting fastball, there's a 50% chance they're right, and that's never a good thing. Today, he did a good job of mixing in the slider early, which even in Toronto, when he didn't throw much, but he waited until like kind of one go through the order to mix in the slider. Off the jump, he was mixing in all four pitches. The velo was really good. And when the velo's good and you show them, not even for strike, just show them the slider and curveball, they can't sit changeup. And he had changeup command all day, got whit three times. He looked phenomenal today. He looked a lot like the Toronto game and thank God not like the Texas game.
The crazy thing too is the changeup is his best pitch. They showed that graphic on Nesson. He had 10 whiffs, none of them even on that changeup. So it's like he crushed it today. 6 2/3, no earned, only allowed two hits. And yet his best pitch didn't even generate a swing and miss. So it's like, yeah, this isn't even necessarily the best he can look, right? Like there is plenty for him to tap into. Whereas if he's throwing two pitches, then it's, you kind of hope, like, if you're throwing two pitches, you're not going to make it through a lineup three times. That's for sure. You're certainly going to be struggling to make it through twice. That's why you see the two pitch guys become relievers. It's just hard to do. But I've been encouraged from what I've seen from him. The velocity ticked back up today, hitting 96 in those Bobby Witt at bats. It was awesome. As for the other starters, I mean, Crochet is Crochet and he's great. And I really don't even know what to say about Crochet that's not been said. He's got a
ERA
below two. Let's hear it.
That was the best Crochet moment so far. That strikeout to end his outing. That was the best Crochet moment to this point. That was, that got me going.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. He goes off the mound. When Crochet misses a spot, it's like you can hear it through the TV. It's like, fuck.
Fuck.
It's like, fuck. But when he struck out Bobby Witt, it's like, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I did it.
Let's go.
Was hit that start yesterday? Do we all agree that that was his best start of the year? Baltimore was really good, but I think if you combine velo, like circumstantial stuff, I think that was his best start yesterday.
Probably yes, because
I'm par.
It's yeah, because like the Baltimore one, they won that game by a bunch, right? Like that.
Yeah, but also remember that Baltimore game, they were kind of sputtering, and then the whole conversation after the Baltimore game was, that's what you need out of your ace. He like turns everything around, blah, blah, blah. Producer Joe. Joe.
How are you guys forgetting his near no-hitter?
Oh, that's true, the near no-hitter. But the thing...
He didn't go super deep in that... Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
He took it to
which
the
game
eight.
Was that?
But that was the White Sox. It was the first White Sox game where he had a no-hitter.
Oh,
in the
true. Eight. Yeah, that kind of... Yeah, yeah, that no, being right. The White
Joe's
Sox kind of...
Right. Joe's right.
Damn even right, I'm the right. White Sox.
I put this over that, honestly. It's so hard with the White Sox. Come on.
It was Crochet versus Reagans, and even though they scored 10 runs, when Crochet was in the game, it wasn't – like, it got – like, the game got out of hand, but it wasn't out – it certainly was not out of hand for the majority of Crochet's pitches. Like, he had to work, and even when it got out of hand, he had the bases loaded, Bobby Witt at the dish. He's over 100 pitches. If it were me, and I texted you guys in the chat, I didn't necessarily want him going – too far over 100 pitches, and they left him in to do it. Finish your job. You're the ace, and he got it done. And the primal Crochet scream, yeah,
yeah, I did Fuck. It. I did it.
Ouch!
I want my sandwich.
When the ball hits him in the nose, Sammy, what's the noise when the ball hits him in the nose?
Ouch!
Ouch!
This sounds like an American Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's like if he didn't have the Austrian accent.
Ouch.
If he didn't have the Austrian accent, he would sound just like Crochet.
So yeah, he's really good, and he's got a deep voice, and he also like milks cows in the dugout and shit when he's not pitching.
What was that, dude? Those were long udders. Those were long, long udders, and he was very graceful.
Very smooth milking.
Maybe he was climbing a rope.
Maybe he was,
that's what I was
milking the Brez milk.
Double fisting udders. All right.
Was this before or after the Raffy thing?
It was right before.
Ah, shit. I'm trying to think. Is there anything else we want to... Oh, we could talk... Okay.
Dobbins.
I was going to say we could talk Dobbins, but we're going to... Spoiler alert, and we've already said it on the social, so it's not really a spoiler. We have Hunter Dobbins on the show for Wednesday, and that is his start day. So it's a beautifully timed drop. Hunter Dobbins versus Tarek Skubal on Wednesday is on the schedule. So we could talk more Dobbins then, but
Dob talk.
Just know that the stuff is real, and he might be that dude.
Like he taught Dobbins. Us, he gave us a really good description of a splinker.
Yeah.
When I kind of thought it was like, it's like a splitter and a sinker, but he was like, no, it's more than that. So
hear it on the internet. Good stuff.
Excited for people to hear that one. He's a cool guy. I think he's going to be a fan favorite as long as he sticks around.
Okay. Before we get into some of the drama stuff, last thing, Willier Abreu. I tweeted this out when he hit the home run, just because, I mean, at this point, right now, I mean, he's got a 931 OPS and he's the best defensive right fielder in baseball. Obviously, if the teams were selected today, he's an American League All-Star and he's probably starting the game. When is it appropriate? Well, okay, who else? Right now, if they were selected right now, it's Judge, because they don't do it by position. They just do three outfielders.
If they put Judge in center, then yeah. But if Judge is playing right field, then sorry, Willie.
Yeah, it's true. Judge does have the power to be like, I will not play out of position for this Red Sox second year player.
You know, it'd be funny.
Is Aaron Judge having a good year?
No, not really. Aaron Judge and Garrett Crochet should have a conversation. Nice to meet you.
I'm going
to
pull up the OPS leaders in the American League. Let's see.
Let's Garrett. Let's
see where your ranks.
I'm right Aaron. Now,
I think are you he's ready third. To hear... He's fourth.
fourth.
I'll read you off the top eight in the American League. Number one, Aaron Judge by a lot. He's like 250. He's like 350. I can't do math. He is 250 OPS points ahead of the next. Nope, 350.
Yeah, you got to subtract. You got to subtract. Get on. Get on subtract with it. Get to subtract about 350 points though, because he plays at Yankee Stadium. So he's basically tied for first if you're really looking at the numbers.
1265 minus 982. He's 283.
1265 is his OPS right now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, dude, my he's God. Massive. That's insane. Come he's on, at 1265. Aaron Judge.
Next is Jonathan Aranda on the Rays at 982. Third is Alex Bregman at 951. Fourth is Willier Abreu at 931. Then you got fifth, Cal Raleigh. Sixth, Bobby Witt. Seven, Ben Rice. And then eight is the guy that everyone thought was kind of having a bad year. It's Rafael Devers at 888. Dude mm-hmm. went 0 for 23 to begin the season. I wish I had the full stat because he had another awesome game today. But entering today's game, let me pull up the tweet because I did tweet this out. Okay, he was 0 for 23 in March, and then April began. And since then, heading into today, he was hitting 311 with a 954 OPS. So that OPS is probably almost at or maybe over at this point 1,000 since his 0 for 23 start. So I guess I kind of just broke into two topics there. But what just answer me this before we move on. When is it appropriate to start the Willier Abreu All-Star campaign?
Oh, no. Right now. Yeah. We're 40 games in. All-Star game? Yeah. Early. Get going early for the All-Star stuff. That shit doesn't even really matter. So whenever you want, honestly.
All right. Willier Abreu is an All-Star. Let's start it right now on the Playtesty podcast. Willier Abreu is an All-Star. Pat?
Cool.
He's probably, if the season ended today, what, top six or seven in AL MVP voting?
Why just six or seven? He's fourth in OPS. He's the best defensive right fielder in baseball.
Steals why not bases?
Yeah. Two? Why not number two or three? I'd put him over Aranda.
You have Judge, obviously. I put Bregman above Abreu. Bobby Witt, I would put above. Yep. I hate that I have to say this, but I'd probably put Cal Raleigh.
I was wondering if he was going to say that.
What about Crochet? Why would Crochet not be in the conversation? He's got a below two ERA.
Well, my next one was going to be Scooble.
Oh, how's Scooble, he doing?
Scooble has taken over. Dude. He's now the heavy favorite.
Look at his last six starts. He's let up like three earned runs.
2.08 ERA. Isn't Crochet?
Crochet is lower.
1.93. You suck, Scooble. No, he's amazing. He's the best pitcher in the world.
Oh, let me find it. His last couple starts have been like unbelievably good. Every single one has been like, oh, here it is right here. Six starts since kind of sucking his first two. Six starts, 37 innings, four earned, one walk, 50 strikeouts.
Oh
my God.
The next team that he faces is the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, but that's the ultimate like Red Sox win. That's the most like obvious Red Sox win ever. They'll lose to like Johnny Dickhead with a 7.5 ERA on the White Sox, but then they'll face Tarek Skubal on like a heater and they'll torch him. That's the most Red Sox thing ever. Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo win. You lose to whoever friggin' started the game on Friday, like Lorenzen. It's so Red Sox. They always do this. It's not even just this team. It's like the last 5-10 years.
Dude, so listen, this is his last six starts broken down. Six innings, no earned, no walks, six Ks. Seven innings, no earned, no walks, seven Ks. Five innings, two earned, one walk, four Ks. This is where it gets absurd. Six innings, no earned, no walks, 11 Ks. Six innings, one earned, no walk, eight strikeouts. His last outing, seven innings, one earned, no walk, 12 strikeouts.
Okay, I got to take – Sedan is going to take Scooble deep.
Sedan did go deep in Detroit last year off of Holton in the 10th inning of a game. It was like the first day of September or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Might have been the last day.
Sedan is taking Tarek Skubal deep.
Ready to prioritize yourself? Your skin is a great place to start. Dime Beauty, founded by a master esthetician, is more than just a skincare company. With four skin-conscious categories, skincare, beauty, body care, and fragrance, Dime offers simple, spa-worthy products that will help bring your glow back. Whether you're revitalizing your regimen with nourishing products or building one from scratch, Dime makes it easy. The Work System, our all-in-one best-selling routine, includes a cleanser of your choice, toner, serums, and moisturizers, taking the guesswork out of skincare for your healthiest, happiest skin yet. Dime's commitment to clean ingredients and sustainable packaging ensures every product is as gentle on your skin as it is on the planet. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews and a loyal community, the results speak for themselves. Revive your skin and give yourself the routine refresh you deserve by visiting dimebeautyco.com. That's dimebeautyco.com. Your best skin awaits.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we will get into some Sedan stuff, but I think before we get there, we've buried the lead enough. The Devers, we got to get into Devers, who had just a fucking incredible series. Every game played at DH, no games at first base. He's not taking ground balls at first base to this point. But I am so amazed that this guy, like usually humans, when there's drama, things move faster. You're not this, like, it's just, I don't know. People just, it's just hard to focus on the task at hand when you're worried about distractions. That's why all coaches, and you think about Bill Belichick, it's eliminate the distractions, block out the noise. With Devers, there's nothing but noise. And this guy has his best series of the season, and 4-for-4 with a walk and then a couple hits and a moon bomb today to win them the game. It was so impressive, but you go back to before game one of the series. John Henry, the guy who, since we've started this podcast up until probably the moment they signed Alex Bregman, we have talked about, does this guy care at all about this team? Flew out, obviously was not, surely not planning to fly to Kansas City in
May.
He
loves Kansas City, dude. That's his spot.
Yeah, he was obviously planning this trip and just had to fit in a quick meeting with Devers too while he was there. But yeah, he flew down, Sam Kennedy flew down, Breslow flew down. And John Henry, Alex Cora, they met with Devers. And the Breslow comments after that, two things I found notable. First, I found it notable that Breslow wasn't a part of that meeting. Clearly, Rafael Devers made it obvious that he hates Craig Breslow. Second thing I found notable was that Breslow talked about the importance of being a good teammate. And that's something they emphasize with the Red Sox, is being a good teammate. And he said it twice in that interview. So clearly that's a point of emphasis. And when you're talking about that, when that comes up because he thinks, and he didn't obviously explicitly say this, but you don't talk about the need to be a good teammate unless you think that Rafael Devers in this situation is not being a good teammate, which I think there's plenty of argument to be made there. I think the best thing that Rafi Devers can do for the team is to play first base. And my thought is that we'll get there. But for now,
just be open to it. Just be open to it.
Yeah, try it out. But the fact that Breslow said that they're emphasizing being good teammates shows where he's at there. And obviously, Alex Cora said the conversations are ongoing. But feel free to respond to any of that, because I thought those three things, the fact that John Henry went, that Breslow wasn't part of the meeting, that Breslow emphasized being a good teammate, and that Cora said the conversations are going to be ongoing. That is the synopsis there for where things stand. And to me, I will say, I think in the end, this does result in Devers playing first base.
Ooh, okay. I mean, talk about like I said earlier in the show, a throwback Red Sox weekend. You have John Henry showing that he cares. What year is it? Crazy. So I do think it's probably good they spoke. That was, for all the drama, all the yelling I did, all the conversation we had on our last time we recorded, none of that needed to happen. That could have all stayed in-house. Like Devers, say what you want about how the Red Sox handled the situation. This specific wave of drama, that was all Rafi. Like, well, you didn't have to say any of that publicly. You could say it privately. Probably gets your point across just as well in a different way. But I think it's good. It's good that they went out there. They spoke to him. I think if I were John Henry, I'd kind of give Rafi some context. Like, look, we love you. You're a great player. You're the highest paid player in the history of the Boston Red Sox. Manny Ramirez, David Ortiz, Pedro Martinez, list goes on. You're paid more than all of them. So if we ask you to play first base, at least publicly, just say, I'll do whatever it takes to help the team. You don't have to want to do it. You don't even have to do it. If you really don't want to do it, we'll take it behind closed doors and talk about it. But that stuff has to stay in-house. It's like the Belichick thing that one of you mentioned earlier. Great at blocking out the noise. That is actually important, especially in Boston. So I hope this blows over. I hope this is a nothing, just like it was most of the time with Manny Ramirez up until the end. And we can all move on and the team keeps winning, blah, blah, blah. But I am kind of happy that they went out there and spoke to him. It's a good sign for the organization, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the other good thing too is like this isn't foreign to John Henry. Like he did this with Manny. Maybe not to the degree of insanity as Manny, but like brief player turmoil, like someone who's pissed off. He's done this before. He's walked this walk. I was shocked but incredibly happy that he flew down to Kansas City and had that meeting. And I would imagine that meant a lot to Rafi. Because it's one thing to kind of have, you know, core in his ear and be like, hey, like, this is coming from the top and we love you, or they say they love you. And then Breslow, no. John went down there. He handled it himself. He talked to him face to face. All the respect in the world to John Henry, because there was legit, I don't want to say there was, the risk is gone, but there was a very real risk of things really, really blowing up. And since that meeting, it seems like everything's kind of been smoother sailing. We'll see how it goes as, you know, time keeps going. I would imagine if the Sox lose in Detroit and it's because Nick Sogard doesn't get a hit, people are going to be pissed again. But but John going down and having that meeting seems to indicate, you know, cooler heads have prevailed, because since then it's kind of been radio silent on that front.
Well, hopefully, because Devers hasn't spoken since then, and Devers, obviously, he's picking and
choosing. Don't speak.
Yeah.
Don't.
I mean, he basically, for the most part, has not, since Casas has gone down, he has chosen to speak one time, and that's where we're at. So we'll see what happens if he's asked to speak. And Pat, I want to quickly touch on the point you made about John Henry going down. Don't forget, John Henry going to the Dominican Republic is in part what closed that extension. Like we don't get to see much regarding Devers and John Henry's relationship, but we do know that John Henry making the trip to the Dominican Republic played a big role in Rafael Devers ending up deciding to accept the Red Sox extension offer and stay here long term. So it certainly is a good thing that he decided to do it. I hope that it means that cooler heads have prevailed, and the fact that Cora says the conversations are going to be ongoing hopefully means that things are in a better place now than they were, but we'll see. I mean, Devers is going to have to speak to the media again at some point. It's going to get asked again. Last time he basically waited, it was around 2 weeks, and then started telling media people that he would do the whole DH thing. We'll see what happens this time. Hopefully it's the same story.
You think he's actually going to play first base? I mean, okay, let me.
Yeah, wait, Sammy, you sounded surprised when I said I thought he was going to play first base. Do you not think that that's where this ends?
Yeah, I my guess was in June that I thought like a month from now he would start playing first base. But then the more I think about it, I'm kind of like coming off of that. I'm really waffling on this. I don't know. He's such a weird guy, Rafi. But like, it wouldn't shock me. But also, I don't know. It's a tough call. Again, I would just put Christian Campbell at first base. I don't think it would bother him whatsoever. He's get Marcelo up here to play short. Move Trevor to second. Question for you guys.
Rob Bradford's report or from the scout that Marcelo.
No, what?
One scout told Bradfo that Marcelo is better right now than Roman Anthony.
Oh.
And yeah, he's ready to go.
He's turning around 97 mile an hour fastballs like they're nothing. Yeah, I did see that. Question for you guys. Did they mention, so I was Friday night, one of my best friends, he had a birthday, 30th birthday. So I was kind of in and out watching that game. Had to rewatch it.
Way younger than you. It's crazy.
I know, crazy. I watched the Sox in two, but that doesn't give you the side commentary. It's more of a condensed, just the game. Did they say why Pedroia was there on the broadcast?
Yes. See Bobby Witt.
It was, It was like the only weekend that his kids didn't have anything going on. And it was a perfect recipe of the kids seeing their favorite player and Pedroia get to see the Sox.
Damn, because I was thinking, like, what if he said something to Rafi? That would have been like...
He could have.
A play Tessie, we cooked it up kind of thing.
Don't forget, Rafi used Dustin Pedroia's glove for years.
Like, yeah.
Pedroia, I mean, I know that they're obviously from different backgrounds, but Pedroia was one of those veterans. When, like, everyone like attributes it to Xander and to JD, like Rafi's upbringing was with those guys. But don't forget, like, there's great video of Pedroia working with Devers at third base, and Rafi used mm-hmm. Pedroia's glove for years. So I hope they talked. I hope they did.
I hope so too. By the way, on the topic of being a good teammate, I don't think Rafi's a bad teammate, but it's just not good to just refuse to play a position because you don't want to. Like, again, behind closed doors is different, but publicly, we do have to touch on that. So I think Rafi in that moment was not being a good teammate, but that doesn't mean he's not a good teammate. Big picture, just a blip in the radar, hopefully.
Yeah, and again, I'll say what I said on last show, but Rafi has a chance to come out of this looking like an absolute saint. Like, if he goes and plays first base, then he's the guy that got dicked around several times and ended up doing what was best for the team at every point, even though he clearly didn't want to do it. I still think that that's where this ends up. Pat, do you think he's going to end up playing first base when this is all said and done?
I do, and that's coming from a guy who took Rafi's side in the whole public outburst thing. I think he does. I think he's just too like knee-jerk reactionary with things like this. Like, he just gets so pissed off initially, and he just sounds off to the media, and then he stews over it, and then he goes, all right, okay, I'll do it. I do think he ends up going over there, especially where Cora, even after the meeting with John Henry and after Breslow's comments and all this, he said conversations will be ongoing. So I think they kind of like slowly chisel away at it and ease him into it. I think that's the only way he will do it, is if they truly like at your own speed learn it kind of thing. I don't think they're gonna be like, you have to do XYZ over the next 2 weeks. You're gonna start June 1st. Like, I think they're gonna say like, build up your confidence over there, get to learn it, get to know it, and then when you're ready, let us know. I think that's how it's gonna end up shaking out. But yeah, I think he ends up over there at some point.
Good compromise, kind of like do it, but tell us when you're ready. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of like in spring training, it's, yes, I will DH, but I will do this spring training the way I want to do spring training. And they were like, okay, yes, you can do what you
probably
want.
Probably don't do that again, though. Yeah, that was a cold start he had.
Imagine what his numbers would be if he just played spring training and didn't use the first five games as his spring training.
Dude, I keep thinking that. I keep thinking like, oh, Rafi's numbers are so good, but what if he wasn't 0-4, 600, whatever? In his first few games, like, that was, he was ice cold. Like, you'll never see that. Hopefully never see that again with Rafi, that level of coldness.
We knew it in spring training too. Remember, we were down at that Twins game. I think it was against
Paddock.
Yeah. And he was like way late on 93, and we're like, oh, his swing looks rough right now.
Yeah.
We knew it. We were up in the press box. It was bad.
His swing was loopy. You could see it like it was like a loop, which it's normal when it's like long and flat in the zone for a long time is when he also, he's so much better when he doesn't overswing. Even the home run today was not a hard swing. That was his regular swing. When he does that big like load up and like whack, never works. I wish he would just do that normal swing every time. He'd have a 2000 OPS. Screw you, Aaron Judge.
One last thing on Rafi. I'm double checking this, but I am pretty sure that coming into this series, his batting average, I think, was like 255. His batting average was 255. His batting average after the Kansas City series is up to 280. He brought his batting average up 25 points in three games.
So, okay.
Pretty damn good.
Before we get to enough said, we do have to touch on Sadon Rafaela. I'm actually gonna try to pull up the full quote, but for context here, Sadon has been considerably better for about a week now. So it was seven games. How did he do today? He had a hit today, right?
Yeah,
like a 1-for-4 or something. 1-for-3.
Sadon went 0-for-2.
0-for-2.
Yeah, no, 0-for-2.
With what? He didn't. What was the third?
He had a sacrifice.
Oh, he sacked bunt. That was a good bunt. Good at bat.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so OPS is down to 667, but he was in the mid 580s for OPS. He had just a really good week, four doubles. He batted 400 in over a seven game stretch leading up into today's game. And, you know, he's been putting together better at bats, longer at bats. But then you had the Sean McAdam article today, which had a little tidbit on Seydon Rafael and maybe some, I don't even know how I'd put it. Like, he wrote it. I'll just read the quote. He said growing frustration. That's how he put it. He said, quote, "There's some growing frustration within the Red Sox organization about outfielder Seydon Rafaela. More than once, Rafaela has been advised in the dugout to take the first pitch in his next at bat, only to swing freely minutes later." And this is coming off, this is before Sunday's game. So he's hitting 400 in his last seven games. He has four extra base hits, putting together longer at bats. My guess is that Sean got this tidbit earlier in the week and he saved it for his Some Things I Think piece that he drops on Sundays. And obviously it kind of comes across odd because he's playing well and then you kind of drop that quote. But I don't blame Sean for that. I sort of just, it's on the guy who said it.
What's he supposed to do?
Yeah.
What's he supposed to do? Not share it? Oh, he had a good like four games. I'm not going to share this banger of a quote. Sorry. He's a reporter.
That's what he's supposed to do. And that quote is huge context for, I mean, obviously Roman Anthony waiting in the wings, and we're talking about who is going to be the odd man out. And when Seydon Rafaela plays like this, Roman Anthony sure as shit isn't getting called up to replace Seydon Rafaela. So regardless of how he's playing, though, that quote is significant because it kind of shows you, I don't know who said it. I don't know if it probably came from the dugout and not the front office, considering it probably came from someone who told him to take the first pitch and he didn't do it. But if there's people in the dugout that are frustrated with him, yeah, I mean, if the top prospect in baseball is coming up, probably the guy that you're frustrated with that overall has not been a very productive offensive player this year is going to be the one to go down. That said, or not go down, but maybe lose at bats. That said, sure, shit not happening right now. I've been as impressed with Seydon over the last set. He went through runs last year where he got hot and maybe even produced more power than he has in this stretch. But I've been really impressed with the quality of the at bat that he's been putting together over this stretch. Like, yes, he's good when he swings at first pitches, and when he's hot, generally it's those pitches that he gets. But I want to see him. I cannot stand these. And we've seen it a lot from the Red Sox when they struggled, like these seven, eight, nine pitch innings. And a lot of them happen in that Rafaela pocket because he goes after the first pitch. He had a bunch of six, seven, eight pitch at bats in this series. And I've liked the way he's playing. I wouldn't read too much into the quote because we don't know when it was said. But if he does start to struggle again, that's going to be something to think back on.
I don't think you need the quote to kind of see that happening. The whole book on him in 2024 was that he's too aggressive and he chases too much. And then even this Wednesday, we were talking at Fenway, Gordo. I was saying Seydon swung at the first pitch in every at-bat the night before. And this was way before we heard about this quote. It's like, if you've been watching the games and following along, you don't need to be a baseball expert to know this is definitely not what they want him to be doing. That said, the last few days, I don't even know if I want to call it a stretch. It's like the last few games, he's looked better. So maybe someone said something that got through to him. But yeah, I mean, if Seydon Rafaela is swinging at the first pitch four times in one game, like he did on, I forget if it was Monday or Tuesday of this week, then yeah, that's not good. It's no surprise that that quote was said, that it came out a little bit of a surprise. Sure, like I don't know why you would share that, but that it's being said, no, it's not a surprise.
Sammy, by your surprise that you would share it, you're talking about the member of the organization, you're surprised that they would share it with Sean.
Yeah, why would you share that? Like, what's the point of that? Especially if you want to move Seydon Rafaela, if he's a trade chip, and I'm not saying I want this or the Red Sox want this, but you have Roman Anthony waiting in the wings, so obviously it's a conversation that needs to be had. If you want that guy off the roster and you want to get anything in return, why are you publicly trashing his ability to be coachable? It's just, again, it's like the Rafi stuff. Keep that shit in-house. And this is why, for the whole time we've had this podcast, I'm always like, don't talk. These guys should not talk to the media about stuff like this. It's great content for us, so I appreciate that. But in terms of operating a team, there's no upside to it. So please stop, Red Sox. No more talk.
I think the other thing with Seydon is he came into spring training with a totally new approach. He was taking pitches, he was working counts, and it looked so promising. And then, the second the actual season started, it seemed like he just completely abandoned what he worked on in spring training. So from that aspect, whether it be the coaching staff or a teammate or whatever who said this quote, I get how that can be frustrating because he showed you he can do it in spring training. He was hitting .400 average. He was working counts. And then he just doesn't do it in the regular season. And that's the season as a whole, the last 5-6 days he's been playing really well, but he did that last year too. And there's going to be those stretches where, he chases the first pitch and he's grounding out and whatever. But I think I don't want to say growing frustrated, but there's got to be some form of frustration knowing that this guy is capable of doing this. And whether it be just urge or he doesn't want to, he's not doing it. So I agree. It's weird that the quote came out, but I also get where the quote is coming from.
And also, got members of that organization, guys with the team who don't make the decisions, they're just like us. They're all wondering when Roman Anthony's going to get the call. And it's so much easier to look at guys who play the outfield because you see Roman Anthony is ready. And it's easy to look at those guys and put a magnifying glass on them and scrutinize them and say they should be the one to lose ABs for Roman Anthony. It's the same thing with Trevor Story at shortstop. He's going to have a magnifying glass on him, as he should. He has struggled mightily, and we don't really have time to talk about that in this podcast. His struggles continued in this series outside of the home run, which was a good at bat, but it was either 3 or 4 strikeouts in the game outside of the home run. And he has struggled mightily, and Marcelo Meyer continues to play well. So yeah, Trevor Story is going to get criticism when he doesn't play well, and you're going to get people. I tweeted out a stat line for Trevor Story over his last 15-ish games, and all of the comments were bring Marcelo Meyer up. So yeah, when Sadon struggles and you see quotes like this, you're going to get Roman Anthony comments. One thing I will read off, and we have to get to Nuff Said soon, but Sadon Rafaela's OPS for the season right now, it's .667, but he's played elite defense and he's been an elite base runner. Go look at the Savant page, and there's some good under the hood numbers with Sadon on the Savant page. I question it a little bit because it doesn't look like he's, outside of this last stretch, been crushing the ball and barreling up balls. But I digress. Looking at Jaron Duran here, I just read Sadon Rafael has got a .667 OPS. Jaron Duran, .687 OPS, and obviously not close to the defender that Rafael is. That said, when Jaron Duran goes, the Red Sox go, and he's obviously way too established of a guy to bench. But again, the production is the production. If Sadon continues this stretch and, all of a sudden he turns into one of your better players, that magnifying glass is going to go to Jaron Duran. And I'm not saying that that's fair or that, people should talk about Jaron Duran losing playing time, but that's just, if Willy Abreu's crushing it and Sadon Rafael is crushing it and Roman Anthony looks like he's ready to come up, that's just going to be what happens. The magnifying glass will go there and the conversations will happen. Anything from you guys on Sadon before we go to Nuff Said?
Nope.
Ready to prioritize yourself? Your skin is a great place to start. Dime Beauty, founded by a master esthetician, is more than just a skincare company. With 4 skin-conscious categories, skincare, beauty, body care, and fragrance, Dime offers simple, spa-worthy products that will help bring your glow back. Whether you're revitalizing your regimen with nourishing products or building one from scratch, Dime makes it easy. The Work System, our all-in-one best-selling routine, includes a cleanser of your choice, toner, serums, and moisturizers, taking the guesswork out of skincare for your healthiest, happiest skin yet. Dime's commitment to clean ingredients and sustainable packaging ensures every product is as gentle on your skin as it is on the planet. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews and a loyal community, the results speak for themselves. Revive your skin and give yourself the routine refresh you deserve by visiting dimebeautyco.com. That's dimebeautyco.com. Your best skin awaits.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nope. Okay. Enough said. I guess I'll go first. I didn't have enough said, but I do now. The Rockies fired Bud Black?
After a win.
After a win? They're 7-33.
They won today and then just fired Bud Black. I think is that great manager.
Why do you think that?
I think early on with those Story and Arenado teams, like early on in his tenure, he had a pretty average roster and they had some pretty good years. But with the roster he has, I mean, Joe Torre couldn't coach them to 80 wins. I do think
anyone who's been around as long as him, you got to be a good manager to stick around as long as he's stuck around in Major League Baseball. Yeah. But I do think like if you look at the Rocky, I'll just talk about the lineup. The lineup is, it shouldn't be performing this bad. Like, I think Goodman's a decent catching prospect. First base is a mess. They have Adele Amador, who is a top prospect. They have their shortstop, Tovar, who was really good last year. He's hurt now, but he wasn't playing well. McMahon is a solid player. The outfield, they have Veenup. They have Doyle, who's amazing. Doyle's a freak. So, yeah, they're a terrible team, but I think they're not. They shouldn't be this bad. This is bordering on historically bad. So, I don't know if firing Bud Black is the move, but I'm not. I mean, well, it's the fact that they have movement.
Their season's over anyway, right? Like,
it's over.
They could
maybe
they
just
could
get a new look
the rest of the way. Yeah,
get a guy for the future. Maybe they're already looking ahead. Like, this is a young manager who they want to kind of grow with the team. But they're terrible. But their roster on paper, it doesn't look like the White Sox, where there's like not even recognizable names. Like, they have some good players on that team, and they're just not. I mean, they're terrible. Like,
this is actually crazy. Pat, he had a couple of good seasons. So his first year was 2017. They made the playoffs two straight years. But this is crazy. What other manager could survive this many losing seasons in a row? 2019, they were 71-91. Then they were 26-34 in the shortened season. Then they were 74-87. Then they were 68-94. Then they were 59-103. And then they were 61-101, and they brought the manager back every single time. I can't think of another example of any coach in any American sport that could survive that for as long
because,
as Bud Black.
Because look at the owner, man. Look at the owner. I mean, it's tough to get a managerial job in Major League Baseball. So if you're Bud Black, you're not going to leave. And if they're not firing you and they're putting these subpar, to put it lightly, rosters out every single year, and they're trading away all your stars every time they're close to a contract year, and this is what's going to happen. I think it's just a unfortunate situation.
They don't trade their. That's the problem, though, is they don't trade their stars. They let them get to free agency and they lose them.
Actually, that's
they don't
true.
Get anything for their.
They
guys.
Don't trade them.
That's
yeah, they let
suck.
Them walk. And then when they do trade them, it's terrible. Like Nolan Arenado.
That was all just a money saver. Like, and that's probably why they didn't fire Bud Black, because then they'd have to hire another manager and pay more money.
They've had so many opportunities to trade Ryan McMahon, but apparently Dick Monfort loves him. That's like his guy.
We'll never trade him. Ever.
It's so stupid. You can help the rebuild so much. He's good. He's a good player. You could get something for him. They're like, nah. We'll keep him. Keep him until he's not good anymore.
He's important
to our
winning.
And then we'll recycle him.
One guy. Sorry, Sammy. I'll take
you
off.
Go ahead.
One guy who weathered a storm, not as long, Brandon Hyde. His first 3 years with the Orioles, 54-108, 25-35, 52-110.
Oof. Yeah. Well, again, you look at the rosters. It's just like, at what point do you start pointing the finger? Like,
he's not going to.
Would you start pointing
this.
The finger? I was going to say, would you start pointing the finger at Brandon Hyde?
Yeah.
He's not. Is he going to make it through the season? Also, Pat, the storm you say he weathered there, he did weather it, and he came out on the other side. But that storm was about half the length of the Bud Black.
Yeah, no, I know.
Like, yeah, it's crazy. All right, who else got enough said? Both of you guys.
I got one. I just want to hear what you guys think. I put this in our chat earlier today. The Narv, Carlos Narvaez, he might be making some noise in the Rookie of the Year voting if he keeps this up. Big if, He's got a long way to go, 40 games in. His numbers, he's had 97 at-bats, four home runs, which I think is more than I expected at least, yeah. And a 738 OPS. So that's not the most amazing stat line you've ever heard, but 738 OPS, that's above league average. And when you're a catcher who has 97% blocking, 78% now, by the way, up from the 40s, caught stealing, and then 89% framing, I don't know, man. That's pretty damn good. And it, like,
he's got to start. He's got to start.
Dude, he might be. I'm not saying he's going to win Rookie of the Year. I think that's going to be probably Campbell or Wilson from the A's. But he's going to make some noise if he keeps going at this rate. And he has to be getting the majority of the reps, whether it's 60% or 75%. He's got to be getting the majority of them from Connor Wong on this Red Sox roster. So I don't know if you guys think I'm jumping the gun, putting him kind of in that fringe Rookie of the Year vote mix.
He could be in like the, well, actually, did Rafael not get any votes last year? It's interesting. He's not on the list of seven
his
guys
metrics were bad because of the shortstop stuff. I feel like that killed him last year with the Rookie of the Year. If he were in center field all year, I think he would have gotten votes.
How many people do you list on your ballot? Because if it's only three, I understand how he didn't get votes. But
I think it is three.
That makes sense. Because like Wyatt Langford was, so it went Luis Gil, Colton Cowser, Austin Wells, Mason Miller, Cade Smith, Willier Abreu, Wyatt Langford. He could get into if it's only three, I don't know if he's gonna get votes. Just because everyone just looks at the offensive numbers. No one's gonna be like, this guy was the best defensive catcher in baseball, so he should get votes. Otherwise, Willier would have been higher than sixth last year.
Yeah,
but he deserves
points.
That talk. He does deserve the talk. You're not crazy for bringing it to that spot.
Like if he finishes the season, what's he? Okay, four home runs. We're 40 games in. What's 162 divided 16, by 40? Hold on.
16 home runs. 16 home
okay,
runs.
Okay, so 16 home runs. So he's got pop, a low 700s OPS, and he's a top five defensive catcher in Major League Baseball. That's a fucking valuable player, man.
Top one.
And he's got
if you're talking
nickname.
About the work that he's done, top one.
The Narv. Yeah, true. And by the way, last time we spoke about his catching metrics, we had to say, yeah, he's good at blocking. He's good at framing. He's not great at throwing guys out. That's changed. He's mid-70s now with that. So
now,
not elite with that, but good.
Now all he needs is a real nickname.
The Narv.
Pat, you got enough said?
Yeah, I do. I am going to Portugal on Wednesday of this week, so I will not be on the episodes dropping Friday, next Monday, or the Friday afterward. I got a wedding because my friend's an asshole.
Shout out, Pat. Hey, your friend may be getting married in Portugal and flying you out to Portugal, but it's not in October. I've got a lot of October weddings the next couple of years.
Yeah.
I hope it's not on playoff. Please don't be on a game night, please.
Yeah.
Red Sox make the playoffs. Don't put the games on the days of the wedding, please. So Pat will miss you, but you'll be back and you'll have
I'll
a great
back.
Time in Portugal.
I will.
Joe, you have some real quick for us?
I do get a sneeze, not sneeze, squeeze sneeze. One in. That's you. Okay, we're good. I do get a squeeze one in real quick. Gordo, I'm upset at you for not having a reaction cam while you were on radio with Pat, while you were doing radio and the Celtics were on. I wanted to see you holding in every single urge. And Sammy, you need to keep your troll job minimum during Celtics games.
Oh, Sammy, no, you're not excused because they won a game.
Come on, dude. Sorry, tied 2-2. I saw the script, dude. Series over, honestly. Celtics in six. Knicks never had a chance. You guys were when they lost that second game, I was like, oh, cool. Red Sox won. Oh, Celtics lost. Doesn't matter. They're gonna win the series. Come on, dude.
Okay, we need to end this. What is this? We need to end this podcast.
Nope. Series over. Celtics have beaten the Knicks. Don't clip this if I'm wrong, though. I'm not gonna be wrong, so it doesn't matter.
Joe just left the shop, but Joe, tell your dad I said hi. I love Joe Braverman's dad now. Never met him, but he's my guy.
You've never met my dad, but you're still such a fan of him because you got a Facebook recommendation.
I didn't. Pat did.
Or you heard that Pat did.
I thought that
was hilarious. Now all of a sudden you and him want to be best friends.
Pat, what were the three? You had me, how I was like in the passenger seat of a car.
Oh yeah.
Crying, laughing at this.
I very rarely go on Facebook. So there was Fred's suggestions and it was CRISPR Troy, Zach Kelly, Joe Braverman's dad. That was the sequence.
That's actually his name on Facebook. He doesn't have a first name. It's just Joe Braverman's dad.
Joe Braverman's dad. That's how I knew it was him.
That's so funny. So yeah, Joe, tell your dad I said hi, all right? All right.
I will pass that along for him for sure.
We'll wrap this thing up. Appreciate y'all tuning in to episode 210 of Play Tessie. Remember, hit that subscribe button. Rate 5 stars. That really helps us out a ton. So I know it can be hard to figure out how to do the damn rating, but just please, for your boy's sake, do the rating. Rate us 5 stars. Find us on YouTube. We're on the WEI channel. Subscribe to WEI. Hit the thumbs up on all of our videos. And then find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it's Gordo here for Play Tessie episode 210. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.